Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Hey, coaches, before we get going today, I just wanted to thank you for all you've been doing to support this podcast. And we have an incredible lineup coming up here. We have just about every major college conference represented. We have a ton of FBS coaches, Division II coaches, Division III coaches, some great high school football coaches coming on the podcast to share with you and help you grow professionally during this time. I really appreciate all of you asking your questions on Twitter. Please follow me at Coach K Grabowski for our daily updates on our guests and your opportunity to ask questions. We will read them on the show and attribute those to you. So please contribute to the show as much as you can. Our football development model, which is something we've rolled out here at USA Football, and this is really for you to be able to help your youth football programs develop. It's about a long-term athlete development plan, something that comes off of the American development model, which is something that the USOC has put together. The idea is that we're able to teach skills in a progression starting at the youngest ages. We're also looking at the different game types we have, whether that's flag, which is non-contact, limited contact games like padded flag or tackle bar, and full contact, and the right progressions for contact teaching there as well. Be sure to check out all we do at footballdevelopment.com and check out what we're doing with the FDM, the football development model, at usafootball.com/FDM. On today's podcast, we're going to talk sacks and takeaways with Missouri S&T head football coach Todd Drury. And so from my understanding of coach and looking at his Twitter, S&T stands for sacks and tackles. That's our exact topic. And back for a third time on our podcast, Coach Todd Drury. Coach, great to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate being back.
So the last time we talked and you shared with us a very innovative idea on how to practice, and we talked about using the cans and the setup there, and I also had an article on that where we shared some of your video as well. So in our show notes, I'll make sure we link back to both of those things. And then we also talked, you know, the first time, Coach, I think at the time you were the defensive coordinator. I don't think you're the head coach yet. But we talked about your background and your growth as a coach and a lot of different topics there in that first one. So if you want to hear a little bit on Coach's philosophy and the things he's learned along the way, we'll also link that one in the show notes. But our topic today, as we said, is sacks and tackles, something you believe in certainly as a defensive guy, and something you guys have been good at. You've been able to excel in those areas. So, Coach, talk to us and give us an overview about what we're going to hear.
Yeah, so I don't know. I was kind of writing down my thoughts on sacks and takeaways and, you know, hitting the quarterback and taking the ball away from the offense. And the first thing that came to my mind is just that it's a result play, right? Like, you got to get everything else right first. And then from there, you can move on to finishing the play with a sack or finishing the play with a takeaway. And so, you know, there's a lot of other things that you have to do before you get to the results or before you get to the finish of the play. And so I think still focusing on, you know, you can't spend all your time talking about hitting the quarterback. You can't spend all your time talking about taking the ball away. There has to be a balance of like, hey, here's our fundamentals. Sticking to your fundamentals, sticking to your core beliefs. And then from there, be able to, you know, once you get the opportunity to make the play, making the play. And I think that's the first thing is thinking about it. It's like, this is the end. This is the result of good work, right? Everything's a result of our work. And so this, again, you know, hitting the quarterback and finish the play with the sack or finish the play with the ball is the result of the good work throughout the play. And so sticking to those beliefs, I think that's pretty key. So that was kind of my initial thought on sacks and takeaways. And then from there, I have kind of framework as far as like, you know, how to get from A to B, really.
Yeah, well, you know, when we talked about that, I think in your very first episode too, when we did get in the defensive side of things. But yeah, let's move from there, Coach. Let's talk about the next phase of this and the next note you have. Give it to us.
Yeah, so, well, let's talk about takeaways first. So when it comes to takeaways, I'm kind of with Malcolm Gladwell on like the 10,000 hour rule. Like, you have to devote a lot of time to making it part of the way you play. So like, we are huge on, we do a takeaway circuit 3-4 days a week. We do it pregame. It's kind of ingrained into who we are. And we do, you know, the same drills basically as everybody else, you know, a strip, a punch. We do a deep shoulder drill and keeping the quarterback in the pocket. We do a scoop and score. You know, we talk about city fumble, country fumble, where you're at on the field. You know, are you going to scoop and score? Are you going to fall on it? You know, we do a very, you know, very generic circuit, I'm sure, like everybody else does. And at the beginning of the year, we get down to the fine points of it, you know, or you see an error on the ball, you know, all these different things. And we really focus in on it very specifically at the beginning of the year. And then by the, you know, by the week one, it's really a one rep circuit. But it's what we want to do is we just want it always to be on our mind. Taking the ball, it has to be on our mind. And it has to be a point of emphasis. And you get what you emphasize, you get what you, you know, what you celebrate. And so I think just, you know, every day coming in there and doing those things and getting those circuits is huge. It's absolutely huge. And then from there, how do you practice? You know, do you allow the defense to take the ball away in practice? And, you know, especially in the spring ball and in camp and when you got good on good stuff going, you know, there's always that tussle of like, you know, you want a quick whistle, you want a thud, you want to be safe, you know, to keep guys off the ground. But at the same time, you gotta allow the defense to strip at the ball. And so we have a team competition every day between the offense and defense. And, you know, whoever gets, you know, the most takeaways, we set a takeaway goal or a turnover goal. And if we get two or more, then the offense does push-ups. And if we get two or less than two, then the defense does push-ups. And so we have a competition every day between L&D. And, you know, we always get into, you know, offense to be like, oh, the whistle blew or whatever. And thankfully now I'm the head coach, so I can make some executive decisions here. And so I just told him, hey, I don't care if the whistle's blown or not. You know, we've all seen bad officiating. We got to protect the ball at all times. So we try to still keep it relative to the whistle, but we allow them to go after the ball in all those good on good periods as well. And if the ball does come out before or after the whistle, we count it as a takeaway. So I'm a defensive head coach, so I can kind of talk that way. But I think it's good for ball security regardless. But one good thing, you know, we got from Blake Anderson down at Arkansas State a couple years ago was, you know, you never know when the whistle blows when you're watching tape, especially when you're trying to grade effort. And one thing they were doing down there, which we took with us, was they had a guy with a flag who would be, you know, he's their ball spotter. You know, they're an up-tempo offense, and he would spot the ball. And then, you know, as soon as the whistle blown, he would throw up a flag in the air. Well, he was close enough to the play. He was always in the wider tight shot, so you could always see at what point the flag went up in the air. So then you would know when the whistle was blown in practice to grade effort. I always thought that was a great idea. We've been doing that for 3 years now. So yeah, just having your ball spotter throw up a flag as before they go spot that next ball. So you can, as you're watching tape, you can say, okay, that was a loaf or that wasn't, you know, cause you want to hold your kids accountable, but you know, defensively we're playing these up-tempo offenses in practice. And sometimes the whistle's blown, the offense is still running down the field. They're running an X receiver on from the other sideline. They're snapping the ball before we can get back in the stance. And so you want to hold kids accountable, but at the same time, you want to have an idea when, what was realistically the end of that play, you know?
Yeah, it's something, you know, the details, right? The little details, the things that you take for granted, like even some of the coaching on film. This is the second great idea I got today about just things you can look for on film to grade certain things. So we were talking to Keith Bearfield from Louisiana Lafayette, and he talked about, you know, when he was the OC at Quincy, how because they were an up-tempo team, they wanted to see that, you know, as that play in, did everybody's, you know, receivers, talking about receivers, did everybody's head snap to the sideline, you know, to look for the next call? And they got graded on that, you know, practice film and game film, because they wanted that to be part of what they do. Same thing here, like that is a very difficult thing, especially, you know, a lot of times you just don't turn that audio on and upload that audio because it takes up space. So how do you know when the flag blows? I love that idea. Just a great little detail. The other thing that came to mind, as we were talking about takeaways, I've seen so much now of, you know, thud used to be the way and you could work in getting in on a ball and thud and stuff like that. But I've seen a lot of teams going to just tagging off. And back at our national conference, had a chance to talk with Rich Scangrello, who's with the Eagles now, was OC at Denver last year. And he talked about how during OTAs and stuff like that, instead of tagging off, they were pulling flags because guys weren't getting in the right body position, you know, and just kind of not in the right place. They wouldn't have made a tackle from standing up like that and tagging off on a hip. And my thought was, as you were talking about that, wondering about how does that affect, you know, working for turnovers. So I guess, do you use any periods in practice where I guess tag is the tempo rather than like a thud or fit up? And if so, how would you handle the turnover portion of that?
Yeah, so anytime we go, once we get into the season, and we do a lot of ones versus twos during the season, so when our one offense is up and our two defenses out there, all of that is tap tempo for us. So what that means is we're going to come to balance and tap on the hip. But anytime, like in the spring or in fall camp, when we're still in thud, you know, we still want to practice good tackling. We have combined kind of tap and thud in one. And so when a defender's coming up to make a tackle, if he's in front of the guy or coming from a 45-degree angle, then we want that guy to put shoulder contact on the ball carrier. But if he's coming from behind or from a chase position, we don't ever reach and grab. We simply, again, come to balance and tap at the hip, kind of similar to that flag situation like you're talking about, because you just don't want anybody coming from behind and grabbing a player or, you know, chasing the guy down. You want to see that great effort, but you don't want to, you know, you don't want that guy to grab that reach and grab. Anytime you get that reach and grabbing, you're not bending your hips and working on your footwork. So we've kind of combined those two together. And I always err on the side of like, hey, when you don't know, go ahead and tap that guy and let's get to Saturday. But at the same time, you know, then you got guys, you know, some DBs that are, you know, hate to say it, but, you know, those guys don't want to come down there and, you know, show their contact courage all the time. So you got some guys tapping from like they got Stretch Armstrong arms, you know. So, you know, you got to get on those guys as well. But I think either way you're coaching guys. But I'd rather always are on the side of, you know, body position and footwork in practice than the actual shoulder contact, you know. So obviously practicing them is huge. You know, so in the circuits and in practice, you got to practice taking the ball away. I think it has to matter. There has to be a immediate reward or punishment, you know, for taking the ball away or turning the ball over from a head coach philosophy. You know, this year we had new quarterbacks going into the game. So kind of speaking from the offensive philosophy here, we started a new quarterback this year. And so we had a quarterback competition going up through fall camp. And I told the guys, I said, hey, you know, one of the main things is going to be who throws the ball to us during fall camp. You know, if you don't throw the ball to us very much and you're still getting explosive plays and moving the ball down the field, then you'll probably be the starter. You know, if you get explosive plays and you're operating the offense, but you throw the ball to us a lot, you're not going to be the starter. It's just that's how it is. So that was kind of how we went into it. So, yeah, so our offense is pretty good this year, though. So the next thing, you know, I think you look at a lot of different things when it comes to taking the ball away. And, you know, you have contact takeaways where you're hitting the ball, whether it's with a shoulder or, you know, in a play with your helmet or a hand or you're punching the ball out. And then, you know, there's a stat that I got from the Broncos a long time ago. I don't know if it's still – relevant. I haven't checked it, but it was that 75% of takeaways occur in the pocket. And so that was prior to the new quarterback rules and being able to hit the quarterback in the NFL and all those things. So it might actually have gone up since then, because now everybody just tries to go after the ball in the pocket. They don't hit the quarterback anymore. But yeah, so that's something we definitely put an emphasis on, is every time we're, you know, and this kind of pairs together with sacks and takeaways, but every time we go after the quarterback, we have to be going after the ball, because that ball is so vulnerable in the pocket. And there's so much bad ball security by quarterbacks if you're getting that point of contact in the pocket. So that's huge for us. And then when it comes to interceptions, obviously you have to catch the ball, but I think mixing in coverages, you know, in terms of vision coverages where guys can read the quarterback and break off the ball, and mixing in, you know, man types concepts, whether it's, you know, two free or man free or quarters coverage where you're man turning with your DBs. But I think, you know, both those, you know, I've heard guys make arguments that, oh, if you're man defense, you don't get as many interceptions. If you're vision defense, you get, you know. And I think it all just comes back to guys to be able to break on a ball. Like, I mean, rarely at any level does a quarterback just throw you the football. And so to be able to break on the ball and make a play has everything to do with the confidence of the defender and being in the right position. So regardless of if you're in man coverage or if you're in zone coverage, I think it just comes back to the guys knowing the playbook and understanding, you know, what their job is, what their role is, and then their preparation of what routes are coming in and based off, you know, their preparation. So I don't get hung up on that as more as I get hung up is where's your play to make, you know, whether we're in man or zone, where's your play to make. And then also, you know, getting the quarterback off his first read, and we'll kind of talk about this when I talk about takeaway or sacks, but, you know, everything comes down to, you know, don't let the quarterback know where to go with the ball pre-snap. I mean, if he knows where to go with the ball pre-snap, it's going to be either a completion or a drop, right? I mean, and so you have to show the quarterback, you have to change the quarterback's picture and get him thinking and get him off his first read and force him into a bad decision. Cause every kid that's a starter has gone through fall camp and went through their decision-making process and learned their keys and reads. And, you know, he's not going to just toss you the ball. So I think you got to get him off that first read. And then from there, force him into making a poor decision under stress, you know, creating fear, creating stress in the quarterback will make him make poor decisions and make him act outside of character. And so I think that's, you know, when it comes to takeaways, but again, I think kind of going back to the top is, you know, talking about that 10,000 hour rule, like it just has to be in your DNA of what you do every day. We take the ball away, you know? And so I think that's where it's at. Obviously there's a lot of good points as far as how you're ripping and how you're punching and all those things. And all those details are great, but it just has to come back to part of who you are. Peanut Tillman, you know, it's who he was.
Definitely. So in thinking one more thing before we move on to sacks, just on the takeaway part, I remember having Chris Kappas from Mountain Union on for the first time. And, you know, Cap has like been back and forth between O and D and everything at Mountain Union. But at the time he was on D and we were talking about turnovers and he gave us this tip that at least for him, he's looking for those opportunities when he could create them. And he felt that if he could really key in on when a team runs play action and being able to get, you know, that guy coming off the edge before that quarterback's, you know, snaps his head around after the fake and be there to, you know, essentially as he's coming out of that kind of fake, you know, with the ball vulnerable, be able to hit that guy or knock that ball out. That's what he was looking to do, and that they had a, you know, a good portion of their turnovers off of those situations. So just that as an example, is there anything you look for as far as an opportunity when you're scouting and game planning to create the turnovers, takeaways?
Yeah, so we do, I'm sure a lot of people do this, but, you know, each position group scouts another position group, and everybody on defense scouts quarterback. And so we're all looking at the offensive players, and that's a constant conversation throughout the week of who's a fumbler, like who's a liability to the offense, you know, and seeing who, specifically which players have ball security issues. And we talk about that nonstop throughout the week, that we have to take the ball away from somebody who has poor ball security. We just have to. We have to punch that ball out of, you know, if they're a juker or they're, you know, a quick twitch guy, it's, you know, or if it's a one-handed quarterback in the pocket, or if it's a running back that every time he jump cuts, you know, there's air under his armpit, you know, those are things we talk about throughout the week and everybody knows, and that is a point of emphasis. When it comes to that specific play calling, so we do a lot of disguise on the back end as far as trying to change the look for the quarterback. And I think, you know, there's like in our base coverage, our most ran two coverages are quarters and three deep, three under. And with both of those, you know, the hitch or, you know, a quick throw to the field of the boundary to an off corner, both those are there. And so I think it's okay to have to know where you're vulnerable at as long as you have something to take that away. And so, you know, we mix in a lot of squat corner stuff, whether that's a three cloud or a Tampa two, or opportunities for those corners to jump those hitches and those quick routes without worry. So just allowing an offense to have something until you want to take it away. So that's always something that we use as far as a play call in specific. Yeah, we definitely edge blitzers, you know, deep shoulder rushers, guys who are fast to fast off the edge. That's something we have in our deal. But I think, you know, the biggest thing for me has been getting the quarterback off his first read. And we played a lot of the three safety stuff, you know, the Iowa State stuff. We played a lot of that this year. And what we do is we put all the five DBs across the board at 10 yards. And then we'd play zero, we'd play man free, we'd play 3-3 under, we'd play Tampa two, we'd play a three cloud. You know, we had a bunch of different coverages off of that. And what that did was that made the quarterback had to read the defense post snap and make a decision with the ball in his hand, and, you know, allowed, you know, our guys up front to rush. And that was really good for us. So from a play call standpoint, I would say, yeah, I mean, all those things, get the quarterback in the pocket, number one. From there, the coverage change up of what you're showing them pre-snap and then taking that away post-snap would be number two.
So, Coach, moving on then to the other part of this, sacks. Let's talk about the things you believe in there.
Well, again, I think it's finish play. It's the finish to a play. So, you know, you're always – you have to have the other things in place as far as, you know, your core beliefs. But I think, you know, sacks, it's an 11-man result where – you know, it's not one guy. Rarely is it one guy just coming off an edge or beating a guy and then, you know, coming free in less than, you know, 1.5 seconds and hitting the quarterback. It's usually an 11-player result. So I think you have to marry your coverage and your rush together in a way where, you know, the more guys you're bringing, the faster you got to get there. And then, you know, the less guys you're bringing, you got to try to scheme some stuff up and get the quarterback to go through his progression and take routes away. So, but okay. So here's something I've been working on lately, dictating protection. And so this is my question for you, Keith, because I mean, you know, obviously been a very successful, you know, coordinator, and you talk to the best minds everywhere. So, but in my mind, I've kind of got to three different types, like talking about protection, right? Offensive line protection, three different types of scenarios where either one where the offensive line calls all the protection. They get up there, they get a play call, and they make all their checks, and that's all dictated by the front and the tilt and numbers and all that stuff. Then you also have one where their quarterback gives a call to the offensive line or a signal to the offensive line, and then from there they make their calls and checks. And then the third type where, you know, it's purely just a called in protection, where whether it's 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 7 minutes, it's a call and that's what it is. I mean, what is there any other way, or how have you seen it done? What would you say the most common type of protection format is when you talk to offensive coordinators or offensive line coaches?
Yeah, as far as the method and how it's going to be called, I've found, man, more often than not, that it's a called protection, that coaches are calling it within the play call that it's going to be set a certain way. Now, I was never comfortable with that. Our offensive line coach did a great job preparing our guys, so we kind of made it. And when we would do our protection meetings, the quarterbacks would come in with the offensive line during those, and they talk about, you know, how we saw, you know, we were going to call our protection, who was going to be ID'd in that as the point, as the mic, and where the sort was going to work out there. And it, obviously by front, it would work out. A lot of times, you know, if we were seeing the odd front, usually there was going to be that linebacker who did not blitz, so we kind of would not include him in it, and the quarterback would have to have that guy. But we wanted the quarterback to really be in tune with what was going on up front, and understanding of essentially where his trouble could be, who could come free if they brought one more than we were protecting. A lot of times, you know, we would check him out rather than just leave him out of protection right away. I mean, we were not an air raid team by any means, so it wasn't like that guy was free releasing. And we would always tell that guy to err on the side of getting out late, because it was kind of better for him anyway, because coverage would drop and he'd catch the ball underneath and get some space. So to me, that was the way to do it. And it kind of, you know, it would help us a little bit in making sure that at the very least, even if we were wrong, the quarterback knew where trouble could be. Been a long time, I guess before college, I would call the protection, but I just found it a better method to do it that way. And then, you know, we went to pistol. You know, our evolution into a pistol team was primarily because we got so much of the pressure chasing or checking based on the back set. So it was something for us that we tried to take away keys as much as we could and try to at least put the chalk in our own hands there for at least, you know, to start things off and be able to say, this is how we're going to do it. So I don't know. I guess I'm not as familiar with just saying, hey, this is it and here's our adjustments. But, you know, for us, it's been a variation of, you know, a man slide and a slide side as we got into some different types of pressures and a little bit more of simulated pressures. I know Wabash used to do that to us a ton, just walk everybody up and sometimes overload a side and whatever. So we ended up, you know, basically with three on one side and three on the other. It was kind of like we had two slide sides was how it worked in order to handle some of that stuff.
Yeah, that's good. That's kind of been, you know, the first thing I did when we kind of got put on hold here for spring ball was I started calling all these O-line coaches and trying to figure out better on learning more protection. So, yeah, I mean, I think when you talk about hitting the quarterback, I mean, obviously, you know, the guys on the other side of the ball, they do a good job too. And so you have to do your work in terms of figuring out how to affect their protections. And so, you know, you have five men with a checkout, like you were talking about, you have six man pro, and then you have seven man, which I just have a generic column for that, which I call max pro. And I always have a note there every time they go max pro, it's like, hey, don't blitz, right? You're just burning dudes into whatever. But so, you know, I think the other thing, so like I said, these things all go together. So five man pro equals five routes. And so that's going to stress your coverage in terms of, you know, how many guys you're bringing. You know, six man pro, there's only four routes. And so if you can keep the back end, keep the, you know, six man protection, then I think, you know, there's only four routes going. And so if you're playing seven on four, you know, that's pretty good, you know. And so I think just trying to marry up the two of your pressures and then understanding the types of protections you're getting and then how to dictate the protections. And so, you know, like, and then understanding like why they're, what's the reason for calling each one, you know, and how to get the slide side, how to get the man side. And then, you know, are they throwing hot, you know, who's the back checking off of all those things. And so for us, you know, we're a 3-down team and, you know, we play, you know, tight front is what it's called across America. But essentially we're bear defense. And so we show as many bear looks as possible. And so, you know, we try to, you know, everybody only has 2 or 3 ways to protect bear. It's big on big, you know, it's full slide or it's, you know, some sort of sprint out or something like that. Or you can try to dual read stuff. But you know, everybody's only going to do it a couple different ways. And so we try to figure out what those ways are. And then from there, pinpoint, how do we dictate to get what we want? And then from there, if we want to blitz the slide, if we're doing anything to the slide side, we try to pick the slide. If we're attacking the man side, we try to twist on the man side. If we're bringing 4-man pressure, we try to blitz the hot guy. And so whoever the back's reading off, we try to bring him in to keep him in. And then, you know, there's 2 other thoughts. There's one is get your best guy a 1-on-1. And then the other thought is to get their worst guy, make him be their best. And so, you know, make their, you know, everybody, there's 5 guys up there. They can't all be, you know, superstars. And so make that guy have to defend everything as much as possible. And we had a lot of calls where we'd put our best guy on the worst guy and make that guy block. So,
always the problem, right? I mean, when I would look at why did we get sacked? I mean, it was just, you know, we were always pretty sound in like getting matched up the right way. It was your guy beat my guy. Your guy was better.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, I try to do my due diligence in terms of like, okay, why are we doing what we're doing in terms of why are we running this blitz? How are we dictating this protection to know we're getting this, you know, to call this play, you know, very pragmatic thinking. But at the end of the day, a lot of times it just comes down to, hey, can we get this guy on this guy 1-on-1 or even in a slide, you know, just make him block him 1-on-1. And that usually works out. So, when it comes to hitting the quarterback, again, it's a way of life here at S&T. We talk about it a lot. And I think the other thing we do is, you know, I was D-line guy, so our defense is kind of built from the front back. But, you know, we rush the quarterback. We don't rush lanes. And so everything's predicated off the initial set of the offensive line. But then at that point, we try to peripher the quarterback because you know how the ball – I mean, everybody's a shotgun. The ball sometimes it's high right, sometimes it's high left. You know, protections change where the launch point is. It's just like, you know, like a punt team. You know, we try to rush where the quarterback's going to be and rush that guy regardless of where the offensive lineman is. So, like, if he kicks across my face, I allow our guys to come inside 100 out of 100 times as long as they stack them back and get to the deep shoulder on the quarterback. You know, when we first talk about pass rush, I just take like a bullseye, right? It has your crosshairs and I put it where the quarterback is. And we divide that up into, you know, there's 4 quadrants there. We have 2 deep shoulder players, which would be, you know, the upfield, you know, those guys. And then we have 2 guys that are supposed to be on the face of the quarterback. And so, you know, we're always, you know, even though we're 3 down primarily, you know, 90% of the time we're 4-man pass rush. So we have 2 face players and 2 deep shoulder players and they're going to work their moves. We're going to run our stunts, but they're all designed to have, you know, 2 guys on the face and 2 guys on the deep shoulder. And regardless of where that quarterback goes, what happens during that play, they're expected to finish where they're supposed to finish. And so, you know, inside or outside of the tackle, you know, inside or outside of the guard. I mean, a lot of times, you know, 3 down front, we get, you know, a 4-man slide to us. You know, that nose has to backdoor that slide to get back to the face of the quarterback. Otherwise, he'll end up on the far hash, you know. And so, you know, just teaching it from a, you know, begin with the end in mind, right? And where are you supposed to finish at the end of this play and then rush the quarterback from there and just make the whole line wrong? That's kind of our base teaching. And so that goes into everything, right? 3-man rush, 4-man rush, 5-man rush, 6-man rush, all those things. And, you know, yeah, so let those guys go. You know, let the guys go up front. Let them go, hit the quarterback, and don't, you know, you can't get mad at guys for going inside, you know, if that's where the ball is, you know.
Yeah, the as I'm hearing you describe it, you know, especially playing a lot of things from bear front, that, you know, with what we were trying to do with our protection, regardless of the front, is somehow I wanted to turn the feel for the quarterback into a 7-on-7. Like, I wanted that guy, of course, on his own, you know, maybe with a back chipping out or whatever it might be, to have that guy on one side, and maybe it was 2 guys coming over there if it was, you know, dependent on the front. But somewhere I wanted to open up a pretty big lane where that guy, you know, is back to 7-on-7. Those guys are not in his face. You know, they're not rushing that vertical rush in the interior lanes. We got him distorted wide, and now he could step up in the pocket or in that window and throw. And, you know, that was always, to me, a beautiful picture when we could, you know, flip the film on and you see that those guys, the way, you know, the sort was called the right way, they used the right technique. The defense tried to beat him. They were able to, you know, get him blocked up and move them in a way that it opened up this, you know, enormous throwing window for the quarterback. So, you know, when you're coming and you're saying that opportunity, you could take it inside, you know, that window that starts to vary for the quarterback, that does become tough. I mean, you might say, oh, you know, you got to set this edge and set contain and whatever. But, you know, now pictures start to change for the quarterback. And you know that the more you can vary things for that guy, the better off you guys are.
Yeah, there's, you know, in normal four-man rush with a shade or a two-eye, a three and fives or nines, you know, you have that B-gap throwing lane to the shade and the five side, right? And so, yeah, allowing that five technique to counter on that B-gap when it just expands, I mean, otherwise that gap's just huge. And it's an escape lane and it's a throwing lane, and you allow the quarterback to run down the field. And so I think, you know, primarily from a four-man pass rush, when you're talking about four-man pass rush, if you can keep the back end with your four-man pass rush, there's only four routes. And so that quarterback scramble has to be taken care of by your low hole player, in terms of you can't be just telling your DNs to run upfield outside and then counter back at quarterback depth every time and then just open up that B-gap throwing lane for the quarterback. I mean, that curl window is just, you know, it just makes things too easy. You know, it's like, it's how you guys draw it up on paper, you know, and we can't let you guys, you know, do that all the time. So I think really letting those dudes pin their ear backs and rush and do what they're on scholarship to do when it's four-man pass rush. And then same thing, you know, five-man pass rush, you start getting into America's Blitz and those things, you have that same thing. There's an open B-gap or an open A-gap in there, depending on what you do with your nose or whatever. And so, again, allowing those guys to counter back off slides and come out of that rush and counter back to where they're supposed to pin on the quarterback, I think those are nuances that you can't practice enough, because otherwise you see that same thing. You got five gaps covered, there's one open gap, quarterback steps up in that open gap and goes and scrambles for a first down. I'm thinking of an exact play that happened this year when we were playing Truman State. It was on a third and eight, and routes were covered, and the quarterback stepped up through that open B gap where the nose should have kept crossing face on the guard. Those nuances of pass rush, I think, you know, that's how you get sacks is through those things. It's, you know, obviously you can drop a blitz, you can dictate protection, you know, but it's getting to the quarterback. And so, yeah, that's huge. But yeah, bare front, everybody protects it just a couple of ways. And so if we can get the protection, we can blitz the backs guy, keep the back end, you know, play 7-on-4 in coverage. You know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of people don't like 3-under-3 deep, and, you know, we make a lot of money off 3-under-3 deep. And, you know, the one thing that's always going to be there is, you know, the hitch and the sticks route. You know, if you're running 1 and 2 vertical and, you know, two keeps going, and when one falls out, when the, you know, you have a 2-over-1 player with the corner. But if you're only playing, you know, if you're only running 4 routes and we have 6 in coverage, you know, then that's a positive advantage for the defense. You know, I believe, I think more people need to run, you know, I'm kind of giving some stuff away here, but more people need to get that back out and stretch the defense versus 3-under-3 deep, you know, instead of allowing these zone pressures, you know, trying to keep the back end and protect it and read it, you know? So I don't know, personal opinion there.
Well, and on the flip side of it, I liked seeing 3-under-3 deep, and, you know, for us, it was, again, we were trying to get those match up, get those five guys blocked so our back could get out into it now and, you know, give us an advantage. But, you know, for us, it was, you know, one of those things, we saw it so much that we kind of built things to attack it. And so there was a lot of 4 verticals and spacing routes for us, right, where we would essentially get five guys across the underneath coverage where there's only 3. So, you know, it's all about numbers, right? Us playing with the numbers on offense, you trying to stress, you know, numbers and absorb one if you can, right? I mean, because you're at an advantage if somehow I end up with 6 blocking 5.
Yeah, and so, like, and that all comes back full circle to dictating protection, knowing how to keep the back end, you know, and that's kind of been my thing over this break as we've had the opportunity to sit here and think and relax and, you know, kind of clear the air and think about what we do and why we do it. And, you know, and I think my goal is to, you know, on third down, first down, second down, whatever, you know, never call a play again without a specific why to it. You know, why are we doing this? What are we trying to take away? You know, what is the full thought process behind all of it? You know, and understanding, okay, I'm dictating this protection. We're going to get this protection. We're running this blitz for that reason. And the coverage behind it matches because this is their out concept they're going to run. And that's what we're trying to attack. You know, whether it's 3-man rush, 4-man rush, 5-man rush, 6-man rush, you know, whatever the rush is, whatever the coverage is, but marrying all it together and having a specific purpose from the front end to the back end. That's kind of been an evolution over the last 4 years. But I think, you know, having this time now to really throw some stuff out of the playbook and then add a couple of things to it and have a purpose, I think that's kind of been my goal over this, you know, COVID-19 experience.
Well, Coach, I appreciate you, number one, taking the time to do those notes and put something together there. I know I had to delay this a little bit, and I saw that on there. I'm like, shoot, we got to get this in, man. Coach is prepared. So, but I appreciate you preparing for this and sharing those ideas with us. And as always, great to be able to talk ball with you here.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, real quick, so I can make sure I do this. I know, you know, Division II, you head coaches still get out and recruit. So for our listeners out there, what areas do you recruit?
So I have Southwest Missouri is where I personally recruit, and then I also recruit all of our transfers.
And for our listeners, your Twitter handle?
At Todd Drury.
All right, Coach. Again, thank you, and we'll talk ball again soon.
All right, thanks, Keith.
Coaches, again, I want to remind you of what we're doing with the football development model. Please push this down to your youth coaches. I think this is a great way for you to get some organization and structure beyond what you've already done. Check it out, all of our program development for youth football at fdm.usafootball.com. Again, check out our systems for blocking, tackling, and defeating blocks at footballdevelopment.com. If you register with your email, you get your choice of 3 free videos. There's some great things in there. I think things that as you get going again, you can get into the summer and maybe make up on some things that you might have lost if you had a spring ball, if you had time here in the spring to work on football. Some great drills for all those phases of contact. If you're enjoying the podcast, please head over to iTunes or your platform and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. We really appreciate it, and we will read your review on our highlight show that we do at the end of the week.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.